All right.
Hello.
Hi, guys.
Welcome back
to the Flick Chicks podcast.
I'm Jane.
And I'm Allison.
And how are you, Allison?
I'm good. It's a long weekend for me.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Yes. And you made me watch this movie again.
Okay, well, it's such an easy watch for me.
That you're just like, I could watch it anytime.
I could watch it anytime, and I don't understand how you don't feel the same way.
For me, it's sort of a multiple breaks kind of movie, where it's like, I think I gotta get up and walk around in the kitchen for a while before I can come back to this. It does have some moments that grab me, without a doubt.
Okay.
I've never wanted to hit someone so much. Well, the girl in Stranger Things that has the blonde hair that's mean to Elle.
Right. Are you talking about Judy?
I've never wanted to burn someone with a goddamn straightening iron.
Do you know how she died, though?
She dies by the curling iron.
Yeah.
Inserted.
This movie is lascivious.
Didn't know that. Speaking of that, the deaths. I have so many questions about deaths.
I'm so excited to talk about this. This is one of my favorite movies. I'll just get into it. This is one of my favorite movies of all time, as far as enjoyment goes. Not as far as like it being a good movie. It's not a good movie. It's a bad movie. It's terrible. It's disgusting and perverted and amazing, and I love it. it's just lightning in a bottle is what it is for me.
Lightning in a bottle is quite the way to describe this.
You could not recreate this movie if you tried.
That's true. It was a once-in-a-lifetime kind of movie.
It's so bad. Okay, we'll get into it. But also, there's some things about about this movie that are really interesting to me. About, like,
you know, I've seen worse horror movies.
Exactly.
As far as horror movies go, the bar is very low.
That's very true.
And I do think that this clears it.
And also, at the time, this was in the 80s.
Yeah.
This probably made it, I mean, it's a cult classic for a reason, right?
And it has many, 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 many sequels.
Yes. And I'll get into that and about how canon all of the sequels are.
Oh.
Because there's some
dispute.
There's some tea, for sure.
Wow. I saw all the sequels on Tubi, where this movie is available.
Yes.
By the way.
I love Tubi. I watch Tubi all the time because it has all the bad movies that I could want.
Tubi's the play. We have all the movies that nobody wanted to watch.
Yeah.
But hey, they're free with commercials.
It's true.
But I saw all Sleepaway Camps are on there pretty much.
Except for Return to Sleepaway Camp, which is the only canon sequel.
They would do that. But I did see them. I did choose to never watch them.
Yeah, I also am choosing not to watch them, but I don't think that this can be recreated because it is so...
I imagine the sequels are basically just like Friday the 13th.
Right. Well, this is so like amateur, like ridiculous, and we'll get into it, but like it's so wild that all the roles are we're following the children around. This is not about the counselors.
Not all the counselors, not about the adults who run the camp. It's about the campers.
The literal children
campers and their crazy ass lives.
Oh wow. Ricky. I'll get into Ricky. God. Oh wow. Okay. So this movie is from 1983. It was directed and written by Robert Hilsick. So a bit of an auteur here.
Let me... Wow. A real artist.
Yes.
He's a master of dialogue and a master of shots and acting notes. Let me ask, is this pre or post Friday the 13th?
I believe this is the only... Okay, so Friday the 13th, this is came out in 1980, I believe. This is the only year that a Friday the 13th movie didn't come out. Or maybe I'm thinking about Halloween.
I'll look it up.
Because I know that this was a gap year in either the Friday the 13th or the Halloween franchises was whenever this movie came out. I should know this, but...
Oh, Friday the 13th looks like the first one came out in 1980.
Right. So this would have been the gap between Friday the 13th 2 and 3, I want to say.
81, 82. Yep. And then... 3 and 4.
Yeah, 3 and 4. So this would have been the gap between 3 and 4. So this was the 1 year.
They were like, this is our year, guys. Friday the 13th coming out.
Right.
So we're going to have to push this one out.
Yes, exactly. So that's pretty interesting. This, I guess, was trying to like take advantage of the slasher craze. And we'll get into it. But this movie I'm fairly certain that this guy just wrote down a list of taboos and was like, I'm gonna put these all in this movie.
Yeah, this would be the craziest movie ever. This movie,
we're gonna push boundaries.
To be honest, if this movie showed what they did, it would be a porn. That's the only thing stopping this movie from being a porn is the fact that they kind of keep it zoomed out a little bit.
Oh, man. So, let's get into it, I guess. I'll get into the plot.
Okay.
In 1975, John Baker and his boyfriend Lenny take John's children, Angela and Peter, on a boating trip. After the boat capsizes, John and the children attempt to swim ashore. However, they swim into the path of a reckless motorboat and are struck. And John and Peter are killed.
Not a bad opening.
It's not. Okay. Wait, though. The freaking dialogue from the boaters is incredible.
John and Peter. Now, wait.
John is the dad.
Okay. Peter's the boy.
Peter's the boy.
Okay. Makes you wonder, what happened to that other dad?
See, we're going to get into it. We're going to get into it.
Because the gay reveal, we're giving it early in the plot synopsis.
Right.
But it's way late in the movie.
Yeah.
The fact that they're gay, you're like, they're gay?
Yeah.
I thought maybe they were brothers?
Well, we'll get into how partners in gay couples who were widowed didn't have any rights to children.
Oh, that's sad.
But this movie, that is sheerly accidental for this movie. This movie
They weren't trying to make a statement.
All subtext in this movie is coincidental.
Okay.
So, just keep that in mind.
Sometimes, you know.
But it really is a happy accident, and we'll get into it once I read an article later.
Sometimes art imitates life.
I guess. Okay, so this is a pretty good opening. But I love the boater's dialogue. She's like, can you let me drive? And he's like, no. And she goes, lighten up, would ya?
Lighten up, would ya? Salt stick in the mud.
And then
that's 1980 dialogue. Like, we make fun of that because it was overused in the 1980s, but that's how people used to talk.
Okay, if you say so.
Lighten up, would you square?
And I love the water skier going, oh my god, the people, watch out for the people.
Yeah,
and they're like, what's she saying?
Desperately trying to save these people, and they refuse to look at the road.
Right.
For 5 minutes. The thing that kills me is they're so far away from the people.
Yes.
Then they start looking away because they have to be.
Right. Or the movie wouldn't happen.
Because they would just go, like, they'd come to a safe stop.
And I do want to get into a little bit of the dialogue that is in this beginning snippet, because of all the podcast episodes I've listened to, people seem to be very confused about this.
I'm not confused about what happened.
Okay.
I am confused about the mechanics of how it happened.
Okay.
Because
I don't think that's what people are concerned about.
It seems to me like there's a lot of ways to go here to not get hit by that boat.
You're talking about the logistics of the boat. Okay.
I'm talking about the logistics of how it killed the dad.
Okay.
Because he appears to be intact.
Right. He's not like sliced in half anything.
He's not
all we
headless.
See of the kid is like this ripped up life vest coming up. It has blood on it.
And they turn the wheel. He makes a big deal about turning the wheel. They do. So getting crushed by the boat makes sense. The propeller most certainly would not have got to him by then.
No. It makes no sense mechanically, right.
Mechanically, it doesn't seem like the accident would have been so devastating.
It's almost like it wasn't thought through.
And like, why did the daughter survive? Like, why did not Peter survive? The other kid?
I think we're getting...
Because they were all in a trio.
Right. Why did...
So why did two die but one lived? What happened to that one? Not explained.
Right. Right. I mean, I don't know how the Angela, who we know, is alive.
Angela's alive.
I don't know why Angela is alive.
It's not clear how she survived the boating accident.
No. At all. Anyway, what people are confused about is the relationship between everyone. So, in the dialogue, it says the dad is saying, the doc, or no, Lenny says the doc is coming. And then right. one of the kids says, Aunt Martha's coming, because Aunt Martha's the doctor. And he's like, yeah. And they're saying, is Ricky coming? And I think he says, no, he's with his dad this weekend. So obviously Ricky and...
Okay. Ricky's and Peter and Angela
are cousins.
The dad
is Martha's brother,
and the guy on the shore is his husband.
Is his boyfriend.
Or is, yeah, his lover.
His lover. They couldn't be married at this point, but right. partner. And then Ricky has his dad, who is separate from both Lenny and the dad.
And he's not in this
No.
scenario. No. We don't even see Ricky's dad ever.
No.
He's not important.
But it is interesting because the way that she delivers this line later on does imply him being important, but it's just not well thought through. It's just not thought through.
Okay.
Anyway, okay. So John and Peter are killed. We never know what happens to Lenny. Just so everyone knows.
Yeah, Lenny is no longer... Well, he will be in the movie for one more scene, but not in an
important... But not in a flashback.
Yeah. Present day Lenny, he's done.
Yes. 8 years later, in 1983, Angela is now traumatized. She has been living with her eccentric aunt, Dr. Martha Thomas, and her cousin, Ricky Thomas.
Eccentric is the lightest way.
Oh my God, she's unhinged.
As I was watching it, I was thinking, this woman actually is the best basis for a horror movie I've ever seen, and she's unimportant.
I am obsessed with her performance.
She's terrifying.
She makes those choices. She's like, those are choices that she is making. Yeah, I am convinced.
You know, I think it's possible that might be how she thinks people talk. Maybe the actress talks like that.
I don't know. Maybe. I think it's possible that also she could be just be like a pretty low, like a community theater actress.
And she was just like, this is my big chance.
I'm being Arch.
This is my big chance.
Oh my gosh. I believe we have, he's like, do we have chips? I believe we have a whole bag. Why, I'm almost sure of it. My favorite delivery of a line.
I tied a string around my finger. Why, here it is. And you're like, yeah, lady, it's on your hands.
And her outfit, she's wearing like this purple dress with like a red beret.
Yeah, she supplied that outfit. She dug into the community theater stock for that one. And she was like, this baby was in Hello Dolly, and now it's going to be here. Yeah, that woman, like that character, I would actually love to see a horror movie, with not being ironic here, I would love to see a horror movie where she's the main character.
Right.
And it's like, she's like an Airbnb host.
Whoa, that's creepy.
or she owns, maybe that's too recent. She owns an actual bed and breakfast.
Right.
Pre when they were air bed and breakfasts. And you had to go to real ones. She owns one. And
right.
it's like mysterious.
And she talks like that.
Things happen at this bed and breakfast. That would be a great movie.
Yeah.
But they didn't make that movie. They made this movie.
And thank God they did.
And she's really not that important to the movie.
Oh, I also love... okay, so in this, it's kind of... I'm going to bring this up because it's going to kind of factor into an opinion, a controversial opinion on the on hot take, if you will, oh, I have God. On this movie later on. But she is like talking in reference to the like stringer on her finger. I believe she's like, oh, it's your medical records. And she goes and gets their medical records and is like, I got these, but
don't tell anyone
how I got them. And Ricky says, I swear to God, I'll never tell.
Yeah.
Ricky,
But then she makes a little joke about how it's because she's a doctor.
Right.
So it's like, I made the medical records.
Right.
But that's unethical, clearly.
Yes. Yeah.
Although it's not.
Well, I mean, in retrospect, we know.
In retrospect, she's a very unethical person. But I think that the idea where it's like, your dad is a doctor, can't give you a checkup.
Right.
It's like, no, you gotta go to a separate doctor for that. It's like, why?
He doesn't have your best interest.
He's not my therapist. He just has to read the charts.
Right.
And he's gonna be honest, he's my dad.
Angela and Ricky are sent to Camp Arawak. Due to her introverted nature, Angela is bullied, her main tormentors being fellow camper Judy and camp counselor Meg.
Now, I will give it. Introverted nature is a bit of an understatement for what's going on with Angela.
Selective mute?
She literally doesn't talk And then anytime someone talks to her, she stares at them unblinking, and it feels like rejection. Because if you went to go talk to someone and you were like, let's say you just walk up to the Starbucks and you're like, hey, how are you today? And they stare at you and they say nothing for 5 seconds. You're going to be like, okay, can I get a coffee? And then they say nothing, do nothing, stare at you. You're going to be like, what did I do? What's wrong with you?
She's really instilling a lot of insecurity.
Yeah. It's like, now, do I think that these girls take it too far? One could say too far.
Yeah.
But I don't blame them for not liking her. I don't like her either.
Yeah. I don't know. That's a controversial opinion, I'd say, Allison, you not liking Angela. She's staring at me because this is a non-visual medium.
How did that make you feel? It probably made you feel a little rejected.
I'm not putting words in your mouth, but it probably made you feel rejected.
That's how Angela made me feel. I would be pissed off, too.
I also think we should bring up the overt pedophilia that happens right out of the gate.
Yeah, right off the bat.
It's unsettling.
Oh, man. He's like, how could I say in less words?
So Artie, the head cook, is a pedophile, is like, ooh, yeah. This is interesting, though. So he's a cook along with James Earl Jones's father, Robert Earl Jones, playing Ben.
What?
Yes. And he says, he's talking about like calling them baldies, calling the children baldies.
Oh, ew.
Which is also what people call people who haven't seen Sleepaway Camp, as in Rocky Horror, people call them virgins.
Ew.
People who haven't seen Sleepaway Camp are baldies.
Yeah, but virgins can be of any age. Baldies are pre-puberty, so that's gross.
Yeah.
Sleepaway Camp, not loving that fact about your fandom. Not loving that. What do they call them once they've seen it?
I don't know. Doesn't matter then.
Adults.
Adults.
Of age.
Of age. But anyway, this guy says that in front of James Earl Jones's father, and he's like, they're too young to know what's on your mind. And he says, you're just too old. And then James Earl Jones's father just responds by laughing.
Just classic locker room talk with you guys. You know when your friend says that he wants to fuck a 10-year-old? And then you are like, oh my gosh, stop.
Classic Artie.
You're so silly.
That's literally Shane Dawson's friends. And then
there's actually a Bo Burnham joke about this. It's that the one where it's like the frog joke.
Oh.
And Tad, like, he's obsessed with the tadpole.
Right,
and then
yeah.
They're like, classic. And he's like, classic. I can't remember the name. Wow, I'm a bad Bo Burnham fan right now.
I know. I feel like one, too. I feel like a bad one.
I can't remember, but it's something about the frog. And then he's like, classic Richard. And then moves on. That's like what this is like. They're like, oh my God, classic Artie. And then Artie's like, shut the fuck up, old man. Also, you're black, so I'm going to be a little racist towards you, too.
There's a lot of race. This movie is problematic from beginning to end.
Yeah, there's nothing.
It's very bad. It's very, very bad.
Who wrote this? Do you think he was aware of the racism?
Clearly, I think he was trying to make the most
pedophilia with
the I think he was trying to make the most subversive thing he could possibly make.
Okay, so this is the very first edgelord comedian.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Wow. This is I will say it's a lot better than most edgy comedy.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Okay. they're not including enough, Allison.
Sorry. I know.
Okay, so Ronnie, hot beefcake counselor.
Hot beefcake counselor. Ronnie, love him.
He's
love
so Ronnie. Sweet.
Ronnie's the best.
Yes, he's amazing. I love him. He wears these tiny little outfits and you can see his dick all the time.
Which is good. Because that's really what makes you keep watching.
It's true. All these, okay, this is the sluttiest that men have ever dressed in this movie.
I'm going to be honest. If there's one thing that we can take away from this film, it's how men's fashion should be. Could be and should be.
Yeah.
It's what we could be doing, but
yeah.
But we're too scared.
It's true. We're really shying away from like what could be, what the possibilities of what men's fashion and horror movies could be.
I'd like to see the outline of dick.
This movie, I'm convinced that the costuming for this movie is the sole inspiration for the costuming in Wet Hot American Summer.
Yeah, I'd like to see, you know, seeing a bulge is one thing. Seeing the complete outline of the
piece. It's intense. It's intense. And you see it in most of his outfits.
And he's doing activities in it. It's like, you know, in Always Sunny, when they have the cutoff shorts. Because it allows me to get a wider, you know, reach.
Yeah.
I can squat down more. I gotta imagine that's what he's thinking.
Right?
And he's like, I just have a lot more of a reach in these.
Oh my gosh. So, okay, but Ronnie is not a good guy enough. So he takes...
Well, he's an 80s good guy.
That's true. That's true. He can only be so good. And he's like, oh, okay, Angela's not eating. And so he's like, okay, I'll take you to the back and like just try to find you some ice cream. And then Artie comes out with a beer and he's like, Artie, like... Don't drink in front of me. And then he just puts the beer aside and it, like, starts flirting with this fucking 10-year-old.
Yeah, and then he's like, hello, Angela. He's probably got his hand on his
yes.
dick.
And this is insane. And then Ronnie is like, okay, you got
well,
it.
All right. Well, all right. I gotta go out there. Also, by the way, Ronnie should be running this camp.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Mel should not be running this camp.
Ronnie is the head honcho. He should be the head honcho. And he's the only person here that knows how to do a job. Every other person, none of them are working. They're all causing problems and mischief and being awful. They're bullying worse than any campers ever
Meg,
could.
I think Meg is meaner than Judy simply because she is a counselor and she should be held to a higher standard than Judy, a fellow camper.
And meanwhile, like, Ronnie, he's, like, doing the books every night.
Yeah.
He's the one taking care of the campers. He's supervising every activity. He's always wherever he needs to be.
And all in those tight little shorts.
And all while looking fabulous doing it. That's a job that no one else is doing in this movie. And he's an all right actor.
It's so true. And he got that hair.
Yeah. He should have, you know what? He could have been more.
That's so true. That's true. He's got, like, that, oh, that dad from House on the Prairie, Michael Landon hair.
Mm-hmm. Dad from House on the Prairie.
Okay, and then he just leaves Angela with Artie, and the head cook, Artie, attempts to molest Angela. And he, like, whenever Ricky comes in to, like, and saves Angela from being molested and, like, takes her, Artie, like, punches a box of potatoes because he's angry. Oh, foiled again.
Another one got away.
And then he, like, comes out of the walk-in freezer and he's literally, like, putting his dick back in his pants and buckling up his pants. And, like, the other cooks are like, or no, Mel, the literal owner,
the literal
of, the
owner of the
camp, is like, what happened? He's like, must have scared him as he's buckling up
his pants. You know what kills me is, like, this is a man who has most certainly molested before.
Oh, absolutely. This is a repeat offender.
I mean, he's not grooming. He's not doing nothing.
He doesn't have time for that.
He takes her to the walk-in and he's immediately about to shove his dick down.
He doesn't have time for the grooming process.
He has no, never, because they're only here for a limited time. And what gets me is, like, most definitely he's been told on, and Mel, what we know about Mel is that if Mel knew about it, he does know about it, and he covered it up. What we know about Mel is that Mel is aware, and he doesn't give a shit.
Yeah, it doesn't care at all.
He definitely knew. And he definitely knew what Artie was doing, and just was like, meh.
Meh. Well, he's sleeping with a counselor.
Yeah, but...
But that's not as bad.
I mean, she's still...
But also, she's, like, throwing herself at him, though. I'm not saying... But Meg, uncharacteristically, why, though, is she doing that?
Yeah,
is the question.
Mel's not hot.
Is Mel written as someone handsome, and then they ended up casting this guy?
I can't imagine that that's what happened. I don't know. I think that they were just, like, we need a reason for someone to know that Meg's gone.
Right.
So, rather than having her sleep with a counselor...
Just have her sleep with.
We're gonna have her sleep with the owner, and it makes the owner look worse.
That's true. That's true.
We've gotta build up.
Aside from him accusing,
yeah, we gotta go from beyond negligence to, to actual crime.
Right, right. You're right.
I don't know how old Meg is. She could be 18.
That's true.
She could be 16.
That's true.
Judy could be 14. She could be 16. I don't really know
the ages. It's hard to pinpoint the ages
of anyone in this.
Yeah.
Other than our main characters who are like 13 or 12.
Right. So, okay, cut to, this is again not including how ridiculous this movie is, and I would pity the fool who would have to read this and not see the movie, because they are not really understanding how Ronnie is salting this gigantic pot of corn. You remember how large that pot of corn was?
It's the size of a human.
Comically large. It's the size of a child.
Now, bigger.
Bigger.
Two children stacked on top of each other.
It's wild. And he is on a chair, like, salting it. And he, like, is salting it and then runs out of salt. And he gets so mad and throws it on the ground.
Because he's having a hard day.
He's not one of the, he's not a jolly pedophile. He's not one of those really, he's an angry pedophile.
He was trying to molest a girl. It didn't work out. Then his boss comes in. Oh, my God. Now he's got to salt this boiling water for corn? Oh, my Lord. Can Artie get a break? This should be called Artie's Bad Day.
And then later, an unseen figure causes Artie to be severely scalded by water he is boiling. They literally push his butt. Just, like, on his big old dirty butt. It's all, like, he's got dirt all on his butt, and they're just, and like, then, bah! And then he, like,
ginormous pot of water.
He's, like, he could go to the right. He could go to the left. He could go back. But he goes forward into the pot of water.
But like, he doesn't go into the pot.
He, like, he grabs. He's
boiling alive in the pot. He pulls the pot on.
Why does he do that? Dumb.
Stupid. How else is the boiling water supposed to get off? It's too big for anyone to push off. The only way that it could come off is if a 200-pound man grabbed onto it with his full force and yanked it towards him, because that pot is so large. Like, I have a big stock pot in my house, and
is it that big?
No. My ceiling.
Why would it be? It's almost like those are not made.
But it's like a pretty big stock pot. Like, you could make like a, you could put like a full chicken in there or something, right? And if I fill that thing to the brim with water and I try to move it, it's heavy as shit. Like, I can barely move it. Now, let's just go ahead and times that by 20. Nobody's pushing that thing over. I find it hard to believe that he was even able to pull it onto him.
It's true.
Only with the full force of gravity.
Oh, it's wild. Artie's incident is deemed accidental by camp owner Mel Kostick.
Yeah, you know, as a medical examiner, he's a lot, like, when they take him, isn't he not dead?
Yeah, he's just screaming.
I was like, he's not dead when they take him. They could just ask him.
Right.
They don't.
No.
They never talk
about it. Because he knows who it is. My favorite part, one of my favorite parts of this movie, is whenever, like, they see the killer, and it's just, like, the victim looking on, and they go, oh, it's you. It's my favorite.
Oh, it's you.
What do you want? What do you want? So good.
I want to push you into boiling water.
Amazing. And then in another racist incident, Mel pays off Ben and the rest of the cooks who are all people of color. And is like, you won't say anything, will ya? And then, like, they don't, and then they are never seen from again in this movie.
Yeah.
And then they disappear from this movie entirely.
They were ever important.
Campers Kenny and Mike also mock Angela, prompting Ricky and his friend Paul to get into a fight with them. Oh my God, what's the matter? Can't you talk? I love these accents. They're so good.
Where are you from?
Amazing. And so Paul is Ricky's friend, and then Paul befriends Angela, and Kenny is later drowned. His death is also ruled accidental by Mel. So this is the scene with the skinny dipping. With all the guys taking off their clothes and going skinny dipping, and then like that.
Right.
And then those guys who got high come down and they're trying to get the girls to go on in the coned canoe with them.
Right.
And they don't. And then one of them, Kenny, ends up going alone. Or isn't it Kenny? Or is it? Yeah, Kenny is drowned.
Yeah, Kenny goes with a girl.
Right.
But then she, like, ditches him.
Right. And then, this is interesting, then he's, like, in this upturned canoe, and then the killer like is also under the canoe, and he's like, "Oh, it's you."
Yeah,
I'm sure the fellas will be interested to see you.
The killer somehow gets out to the water.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And we only see the killer. We only see like the back of their head. but I think this after like the shot of his corpse with like the snake coming out. That is not a bad effect.
No.
That's not bad. Like, there are a lot of effects in this movie that I'm like, that's a good effect. Like, yeah. That, for this time, like, that is a solid practical effect.
It was scary.
And I don't understand why they couldn't, like, bring that to the rest of the movie. Because there are, and, like, I would just expect to see more shots of boom mics and, you know, shots. I would just expect to see more actual technical, like, missteps than I am seeing.
Well, I think that this guy probably does have some qualifications to make a movie. Mm-hmm. I think he probably has zero qualifications to write a movie.
Okay.
That seems to be the main issue with this movie is not... Honestly, the acting is not terrible. I mean, it's not awesome. It's some, like, shitty 80s acting.
Yeah, but I mean...
But what's really bad about the movie, in all respects, is the plot.
Yes.
The plot is absolutely whack. The dialogue
is insane.
Nothing that's happening makes any sense. And that has nothing to do with how it looks or how it's acted. That one lady's really wacky, and Artie's really wacky. Mm-hmm. But for the most part... And Judy, she goes too hard sometimes.
That was supposed to be Jane Krakowski.
Wow.
Yeah.
Too hard, but other than that, it's not that bad.
Angela's a real carpenter's dream. Flat as a board and needs a screw.
You're like, how old are you?
I know! Like, who wrote this for, like, this 13-year-old girl?
How old is Judy supposed to be? She looks like a grown woman.
Her hair is too long. She
looks as old as I do.
Okay, so Kenny dies, which is a pretty solid effect. And Mel's like, it's accidental again.
Again, he's a very... Also, the way Mel talks people into saying it's accidental is he acts like he's like a fast-talking lawyer. He's like, so, what you're saying is, it could have been accidental. Say, supposing that he went into that water. I mean, just suppose for a second that he went into that water, he was high as a kite, and he drowned. Could that have happened? And the medical examiner's like, I mean, it fucking could have happened. I wasn't there. That's why I have to do the autopsy. That's what I've been fucking telling you, is that I have to do the autopsy, and at this point, I can't rule anything out. And he's like, so it could be accidental. And he's like... Yeah, it could be accidental. And he's like, perfect. So we're going with accidental. Thanks, boss. Now get out of my camp.
And he's just smoking a cigar the whole time. It's insane.
Now supposing for a second.
Paul asks Angela to attend a movie with him and kisses her. And she's like, unnerved by this.
Mm-hmm. She's like, no.
Yeah.
And then he's like, but what if I did it again?
Campers Billy and Jimmy pick on Angela, and Billy is killed next.
Yeah. When are these kids going to learn to stop picking on Angela? Now, I will say, so many of these deaths are so forgettable.
He's stung to death when someone traps him.
Oh, yeah, with hornets. By the way, some of these deaths are so unbelievable. The guy covered in a pot, a 40-gallon stock pot of boiling water.
My favorite is whenever Meg dies, whenever she's, like, up against the wall and she's stabbed through the wall and never tries to get out from the wall. She just, like, keeps leaning.
Keeps leaning
against it. It's so good.
But, like, a hornet stings? You died because hornets stung you a bunch? I know that could happen.
What if he was allergic? We don't know. They should have said that.
How would she know? How would the killer know that this kid is allergic to hornets? Like, okay. Boiling water, you could survive that. Maybe he died later. We don't find that information out.
Right.
But they never talked to him about the person he very clearly saw trying to throw a bomb in water. So I'm going to go ahead and assume that he died on the way. He could die from that, for sure. It kind of seems unlikely if they got to you while you were alive. But all right. And then drowning, definitely a real way.
Yeah,
Way you could die. Hornet stings. Well... Now I'm a little bit more curious. That seems like nobody found it. All right. And again, accidental.
Mel starts thinking there's a killer in the camp after this. After the beehives. That's the thing that Tuck tipped him off. She's was like, the...
a pot of boiling water thrown onto my person.
Onto my pedophile chef.
Who's very alive right now. Who's literally just trying to molest that little girl. That's probably a coincidence.
The relationship between Angela and Paul grows strained when Paul kisses her again, causing Angela to have a flashback to her youth when she and her brother witnessed her, their father in bed with Lenny.
He was trying to do more than kiss her.
That's
he
true. He was
trying to feel her up.
Okay, Paul's a piece of shit.
Yeah, Paul was trying to...
Well, she was like, stop, and he was like, I'm not doing anything, Angela.
And then he goes back to kissing her, and he's like, immediately touching her boob.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, Paul, I just said...
Paul is seduced by Judy, and the two are found kissing by Angela. I am obsessed with Judy's Judy shirt. I
she's wearing a shirt.
Did you not see that her pink shirt that says Judy black letters across? It's so good. Also, it's so funny.
Judy's so fucking mean.
She's so mean.
I'm gonna hit her in the head with a roller skate. Like,
there's a scene where she's like, well, isn't that why you don't shower with us, Angela? Because you have no hair down below. Yes. How old are you?
What? Why? What? Also, like... Also...
She's delivering this as a Disney villain, though.
And also, she's just like... She seduces Paul for what? Like, why? She's not interested in him. She doesn't just be mean to Angela. And also, Paul's so weak. Judy's the meanest girl in the world. She's consistently so horrible to him. And then she's like, but what if we made out? And Paul's like, yeah, all right. And then she sees. Angela sees.
Guilty, Paul attempts to explain himself, but is shooed away by Judy and Meg, who throw Angela into the water. And Angela is like excused from being in water activities because of the doctor's note.
Right. And she says like, they say that, like, she can't swim or whatever.
Right, right. But they throw her in the water, and then she's thrown in the water, and then Angela then has sand flung at her by the small children.
Now even the little ones are in on it.
Yeah. She is comforted by Ricky, who swears revenge on her aggressors. I love Ricky. Ricky's outfits are so good. I love his dance outfit, where it's like his Converse shirt and his big old cowboy hat. It's my favorite. It's Ricky's so a good.
Kid.
Oh, he's amazing. He has so much confidence. It's dangerous.
That's because he was dating Judy before she was hot.
Before Judy got boobs.
Before Judy got boobs. And a fucking worst personality of all time, apparently, too.
And then Meg is going to shower for her date with Mel. And then
which Meg initiates.
Yes, with which Meg is like, let's go on a date. Anyway. And
I was like, ooh. Awooga.
Awooga. And so she goes to like this other shower and is killed there by leaning up against a shower wall and someone stabs her through it and she doesn't try to get away.
You gotta be real strong.
Yeah.
Through the wall of a shower into a back.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Sharp knife.
A camp social is held. At the event, Paul apologizes to Angela again, and she tells him to meet her at the water. Mel finds Meg's body. Not you, Meg! No!
Meg, my hot piece of ass for the summer! No!
Four of the six children who threw sand at Angela are found hacked to bits. Oh! Ah, the way they... Hacked to bits!
I did not understand why those kids died.
Okay, it's because they threw sand at her.
I was like, okay. I was literally thinking like, all right, all the rest of these people, I get it. These little tiny children, why did the killer kill them? That always threw me off. I thought it was just a red herring killing.
Yeah, right?
No. Okay, they threw, that's a really minor aggression.
Yeah.
That only is seconds of the movie. Like, if you blink, you miss that.
Yeah, it's, they do not make it a point at
it's
all.
It's not like, it's not like you see a scene where these kids are like, ha ha, Angela, and they throw sand at her. It's like she's getting out of the water, they throw some sand, and then it cuts away.
Right.
And then there's a whole thing, and they get hacked to bits that could have been cut from the movie.
Yeah.
This movie clearly wasn't long enough.
I think that's the thing that the director said he regrets.
Having the kids die?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no point to it. I didn't even know that they transgressed Angela.
I love whenever the kids are camping with the counselor, though, and they're like, Eddie, I want to go back, Eddie. Eddie, please.
And he's like, shut the fuck up. But I like that a couple of them live because they hang out with Eddie.
Right. Yeah.
They would have got hacked to bits, too.
That's true. Soon after, Judy is killed by being raped with a lit curling iron.
Yeah, that was not clear to me.
Well, I think that they were trying to have some plausible deniability there.
Okay.
I think they were.
It looks like she just got burned. Right. And then I was like, why is she dead?
I think they are trying to have their cake and eat it, too.
Okay. Because, like, when she died, I honestly, that was another question I had. Because I was like, I burned myself with a curling iron before and I didn't die.
Yeah.
If I like stuck a curling iron on my leg, I wouldn't die. I thought maybe she died from suffocation.
No.
I don't think you'd die if a hot curling iron got shoved inside you.
I think the argument is that she died from suffocation, but was also additionally raped with a curling iron.
Right. It was just for fun.
Just for funsies.
I was like, because I don't think you get that dead if you got raped with a hot curling iron. It would not be pleasant to live after that.
Right.
But I don't think you'd die.
Hey, he shouldn't die.
You eat shit and live, Bill.
That's a good one. They didn't even mention the 10-minute baseball scene that is just there because the movie was going to be an hour and 10 minutes long without
it. So they were like, well, I guess we'll play some baseball.
Yeah.
That's what Twilight did, too.
It's so true.
The Twilight is 2 hours and 10 minutes.
The camp is thrown into a panic with all these deaths. Thinking Ricky is the killer, Mel beats him mercilessly. He just beats this child with Ronnie working out in the background.
Yeah. I know it was you.
I know it was you.
I'm gonna stop you.
Only to be shot in the throat and killed with an arrow by the real killer.
What are you doing? What are you doing here? Not you.
Not you.
It can't be you. But good. Thank God. That guy's done talking.
Police begin searching for the missing campers. Should we talk about the police mustache?
Yeah. One police guy starts searching.
He has a real mustache in the beginning, at the first scene we see him.
But then
he has what seems to be tape?
It seems that perhaps they didn't know he was coming back, and he got a new role where he couldn't have a mustache.
Right.
So the second mustache
is not real, and it does not match his hair.
It's not real. And he also, it's also like, they could have got a different police guy. It didn't have to be the same.
They could have, it would have been less distracting if they just shaved it.
It's also like, it's a different day. Maybe a different police officer responds. I don't know that just, it's like, no, you're the police officer for that address. No, you responded to that house one time. That's your house now. You're like, sorry, you gotta come in.
Sorry.
I know it's your day off, but that house needs a police officer and you're that house and I refuse to go. So it's like, you could have just got a new police officer, but I guess they already had him hired, you know?
Right. They don't have, I don't think they had a budget to spare.
Yeah, but I assume he gets paid for time, not for being in the movie.
What if they had already paid him up front and this?
And then he went and shaved his mustache?
That'd been wild.
I'd be like, give me my money back, you stupid bitch. Now I gotta get a fake mustache for you.
They obviously did not invest in that fake mustache.
They were out of money.
Paul is at the beach with Angela, who suggests they go for a swim. The policeman discovers Ricky unconscious but alive.
He's alive.
Ronnie and Susie find a naked Angela humming and clutching a hunting knife and Paul's severed head. They are shocked to discover that Angela is actually Peter, her thought to be dead brother. It is revealed that the real Angela died in the accident and Peter survived. After Martha gained custody of him, she decided to raise Peter as a girl she always wanted, already having a son. It is implied that Peter was mentally affected by seeing his father sharing a homosexual embrace with another man.
He didn't like it.
He didn't like it. The new.
And that's why he's uncomfortable kissing Paul, even though Paul's a total dreamboat.
But he's a piece of shit, though.
Yeah, he would have been a total dreamboat if not for the sexual assault.
The nude and blood-covered Angela, with male genitalia in full view, stands before the shocked Susie and Ronnie, who discover that she is the killer. Angela looks at both of them while letting out an animalistic hissing sound, and then negative green.
And why is she hissing? I don't know.
It's almost as if they had a male put a mask on and that he couldn't talk as Angela, so that they just had him hiss.
Yeah. I was like, Angela talks. We heard her talk a lot in the movie, actually. And yeah, I guess maybe Angela did suffer some injuries from the boat thing, because when it does do the flashback, she does have some sort of head covering on, which would imply right. that perhaps they had to shave her head because they had to do some sort of surgery.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe all three of them were injured. She was just the least injured.
Right.
Yeah. So, Angela's trans. Kind of. She's forcibly trans.
Yes. It's very interesting. And we'll... I have some... There's some analyses from some trans women that are included here so that we can go into. Film critic and transgender woman Willow McClay, in an essay about Sleepaway Camp for the magazine Clio, characterizes the film's ending, in which Angela is revealed to have a penis, as both a unique element that sets it apart from other slasher films of the era and deeply transmisogynistic. Yeah. McClay criticized the film for its equation of mental instability with having grown up in a gender role not concurrent with your identity. Nearly every single transgender person grows up being raised in a gender role that does not fit, but that doesn't mean they are mentally ill or seriously violent.
This is true.
BJ Colangelo, my favorite, she hosts a great podcast called This Ends at Prom. And I love her wife, Harmony, who I'm going to read a little bit of her article later on. BJ, in an editorial for Dread Central, wrote that the ending of Sleepaway Camp offers two reveals that are widely offensive to the LGBT community, referring to the reveal of Angela's penis as transphobic and the reveal that their deceased father was homosexual as homophobic. However, Colangelo adds that the movie is a terrible transgender representation, yes, but it's an incredible metaphor about how forcing gender roles onto someone that doesn't align with who they are is fucking dangerous.
Right, it's bad.
Yeah.
Like, it's not good what her aunt did to her.
Right. If Peter had not been forced to live his life as Angela, the events of Sleepaway Camp would have been avoided. Colangelo clarifies that she is not arguing that gender dysphoria causes those experiencing it to become murderers, but rather that children experiencing gender dysphoria and living in non-affirming homes are prone to depression, thoughts of suicide, and yes, sometimes violent outbursts.
Well, and it's also, like, clearly that's not what the guy was trying to say.
Yeah, all subtext.
Subtext is not.
Yeah.
And it's also, like, I mean, I think that this movie, I feel like we've talked about this movie before, maybe on our Patreon.
Yeah.
And I think that this movie specifically has a lot of support from the LGBT community.
It's a cult classic in the LGBT community.
Because it is kind of, like, it's almost like a representation of what it feels like to be forced to live a lie your whole life.
Right.
And the immense damage that can do. And
how complicated it makes you feel.
And how it's like, Angela is a serial killer who kills anyone that wrongs her, even slightly.
Even knocking sand at her.
Even knocking sand at her is enough that she's going to hack you to bits in the woods. But... like, you know, the 7-year-olds or the 6-year-olds or whatever. But, I don't think this movie is trying to say trans people will be murderers so much as this drove Angela to be... Because Angela doesn't murder them because she's trans.
No.
Angela murders them because they're mean to her, and the reason they are mean to her, the reason Angela can't connect with them, is because she's trans.
Or because she is being forced to live a lie.
Right, because she is not in the gender in which she
identifies as.
And that's what's causing her the pain, that's causing her to lash out at anyone that then, you know, affronts her.
Right.
So I think that that's something that I can definitely see, like, gay and trans people identifying with, is not so much the idea that being forced to live a lie or living not as the gender identity you're assigned causes you to be a murderer, so much as it can make you feel when people then...
And it has, I mean, maybe not murder, but it has consequences. It has terrible consequences.
Right. And also, a lot of the things that Angela gets made fun of are for things. I mean, a few of it's stuff like she doesn't talk.
But like not showering.
But a lot of it not showering, not swimming.
And also the staring. People have argued that it's because she's attracted to Judy and is not sure how to understand that because she has been forced to be in this gender identity.
That makes sense.
And that's why she's also confused about kissing Paul because she's like confused about that. And
I definitely understood the Paul thing because the Paul thing clearly triggers the remembering her dad is homosexual, which is painful. For her, for some reason.
For some reason.
Maybe because, even though her dad seemed very
or maybe loving, because this movie is homophobic, but
her dad seemed, like, quite loving men. Yes. And were in no way at fault. It did not cause the accident.
Absolutely not.
But, yeah, maybe it's because she feels like her other dad abandoned her. Maybe it's because
I don't think that's what the movie's saying. I think that's what we're interpreting.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe it's because her aunt is, although her aunt seems that she was fine with the gay thing because she was coming over.
Right.
I don't know,
yeah.
I don't know what her deal with not wanting her dad's, or maybe she was just introduced to gay sex at too young of an age.
Sex in general at too young.
Yeah, you don't want to see that when you're...
That's true.
Three.
That's true. But also, it was quite a tender moment. It wasn't like...
It was nice.
It was a nice
moment.
Yeah.
They seemed like a good, happy, well-off, loving couple.
They did. It's really sad that she didn't get to go with Lenny.
We're tragically taken. I know. Yeah, what happened to Lenny?
Okay, so this is an article on Medium.com by Harmony Colangelo. It's called The Transgender Defense of Angela Baker in Sleepaway Camp. I'm not going to read the whole thing because we went over the plot, but I'm going to read just a little bit to get her... perspective on it, because I think that it's really good. To say that Sleepaway Camp is problematic is an understatement. On the surface and in brief summary, this film is awful trans representation. But simply leaving it at that is only telling half the story. The significance of this film as a standard bearer for gender expression only works in hindsight and outside of the context the film was made. Only is visible if we violently cut this film open and take a look at the blood and guts from more than one angle. The intended goal of this film is to get a reaction out of you. Horror ideally wants to scare, shock, or make you uneasy. And Sleepaway Camp looks to do that by exploiting homosexuality and transgender panic. The discovery of Angela's true identity is shown through a flashback revealing she was actually her dead brother, Peter, all along, but was forced to live as a girl by her Aunt Martha, who I am more than a little obsessed with for the specific kind of suburban crazy she is. There is a distinct feeling lingering over this film filled with they walk among us rhetoric in the way that the gays are here to infiltrate straight spaces. At sleepovers, lock-ins, and summer camps, boys and girls are separated by their sexes to supposedly prevent all of that preteen, premarital nookie from taking place. But if the queers are there, then who knows what kind of trouble they can get into. Next thing you know, the girls in cabin number 3 will start experimenting with each other by sticking fingers in curling irons places they don't belong.
Which is so funny.
Yeah.
Because... that's not what's happening.
Right.
It's actually a straight man under there.
Yeah. Yeah. But that was almost 40 years ago, and immeasurable progress has been made for trans and queer perception since that time. Even in the 10 years since I came out as transgender, words like transsexual, which used to be the proper title for trans women, have become outdated, but is coming back into style in some circles. So how can we look back at the problematic films like Sleepaway Camp and say anything other than, well, that aged poorly? Because the problem is not Angela Baker. The problem is the world and the circumstances that surround her. Peter was seemingly happy living as a boy and would have not transitioned into Angela had it not been forced by Aunt Martha. This is true at least within the first film. In the sequels, much of the stuff I love about the original is retconned for the sake of creating a series, as is often the case with the slasher franchises. With that in mind, I'm looking at Sleepaway Camp in a vacuum as a singular film. Had Angela not been forced to take on the name and identity of her dead sister, which is super fucked up at the jump, then...
Yeah, you're like, okay, so you have all this trauma, you watch your sister and dad die, and now you're going to have to pretend to be her every day for the rest of your life. So it's almost like you died.
Yeah, it's almost like it's almost Peter like, did die.
It's almost like Angela died once and then Peter died. And then we get to kill Angela again.
Which is fucked up from the jump, then the murders at Camp Arawak would likely never have happened. Everyone Angela attacked was someone who had bullied, made fun of, or threatened her. Had she gone to the camp as Peter, would she have been freed of all this? Absolutely not. Junior high kids are little sociopaths, and the other campers constantly shit all over each other as well. But the playful teasing would not have impacted Peter on the same level as it did Angela. Had Aunt Martha not spent years warping Peter's appearances and personality to what her idea of a little girl should be like, then Angela wouldn't have likely been so confused and quiet and been such an obvious target for bullies. I am by no means the first person to present this defense of sleepaway camp, my future wife and now wife. When this was written, her right, future wife. B.J. Colangelo wrote about this very topic last year. They own multiple pieces of art and clothing from the film, and it's one of their favorite films as a couple. She's writing about this very well-covered topic because nearly every take on sleepaway camp by trans people place her in a problematic killer club that Buffalo Bill is the president of, and Angela does not belong there. As any fans of true crime could tell you, an unfortunately common trend in the childhoods of many murderers is that they typically men were forced to cross-dress as their by their guardians. And then they talk about like how that doesn't equal violence, obviously. The framing of Sleepaway Camp presents Angela as the villain, but she is no more of a villain than Frankenstein's mother. Angela didn't want to be a monster. She was turned into one by everyone and everything around her. From where I sit, despite not actually being a trans character, she is an unseen anti-hero doling out cathartic trans justice. She is cursed with the duality because there is no good way to view her as a positive character because she isn't doing good things. At best, there are explanations for why she does what she does, but it will always be a complicated subject. You can blame it on the bullies and Aunt Martha as the root of Angela's actions, but at the end of the day, she was failed by the system.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It's interesting. I think it's my favorite part about this movie is that all of these ideas were not intended by the movie at all.
I mean, it's almost an interesting take on, again, obviously this is not the intention, but it's an interesting take on the idea of what if straight people could understand the trans experience?
Right.
That's Angela.
Yeah.
Like, imagine being a cisgender person.
And then being forced.
And being forced to be trans.
Being forced to present as the gender that you do not, that you do not identify as.
You do not identify as. In front of everyone, you have to live that lie. Imagine how that would eat away at you every day. Imagine how something like a sleepaway camp would affect you so much because now you're a straight cisgendered boy.
Right.
Who's going through puberty.
In front of all these girls who you were attracted to, but you are being forced to present as a girl.
And on top of that, you're being criticized for the fact that you're not girly enough. You're getting criticized for the fact that you're talking to boys.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting criticized for all this kinds of stuff that you would not be criticized for otherwise. It's like, oh, wow, that's horrifying. It makes you understand, like, why Angela did what she did. And then you're like, that's how people are living their lives every day.
Yep, that's what society forces upon them.
Yeah.
Aunt Martha is society.
Aunt Martha is society. It's like, you're just seeing the exact scenario that many people live through the lens of your own experience.
Mm.
And you're understanding it. Like, you understand that what Angela does isn't a good thing.
Right.
Nobody is saying Angela is in the right here. But at the same time, you at least get the motivation.
Right. She's in emotional turmoil.
And it's like, most trans people aren't serial murderers.
But they're still going through a lot of emotional turmoil because of the way society oppresses them.
So you're like, yeah, exactly. It's like, so you can understand that. You can understand a serial murdering cis boy, but you can't understand a trans person just wanting to be on a sports team.
So true.
And I think that, like, obviously this movie is not trying to present Angela.
No.
Well.
This movie is just scary.
Yeah, it's like, this movie was just like, but what if it was Peter the whole time?
Right.
Whoa. That's about as deep as it goes. They weren't trying to be mean to trans people necessarily.
I think
they were trying to use it for shock value.
Yeah, I think that at the time, specifically, it was used for shock value.
Mm-hmm.
As with the molestation was used for shock value, the gay stuff was used for shock value. Like, all of that is just Harmony said, it's all just to get a reaction out of you.
Right. But, it's not a...
But our interpretations of it, I think... I don't know. Does it make it a better movie?
This is one of those things where it's like, what matters more, author's intent or what the audience takes from it?
Right.
And I think you see this a lot. Like, Harry Potter, I think, is an excellent example of mm-hmm. this. The movie Harry Potter kind of, like, sums up the trans experience. A lot of people see Harry Potter as sort of a metaphor for the trans experience, and yet, famously, its author is a ginormous self-proclaimed TERF.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, that kind of ruins Harry Potter a little bit. But also, that doesn't necessarily mean those messages aren't there.
Mm-hmm.
Just so much that what it means is that the message and the experience and what you can, how you can relate to trans people is so much more universal than people would like to believe.
So true.
And so much so that a TERF can write a wonderful story about what it means to be trans. Or The Matrix, like, I mean,
it's almost like it's so inherently human
that we all can love
that we
it.
Can, that we all can understand if we just try.
We just try. and, like, I mean, you think about The Matrix, and obviously the Wachowski sisters right. are indeed trans.
Absolutely.
And they have come out and said that, like, whether or not they understood when they were writing it, The Matrix is a direct metaphor for being trans.
Right.
It is the idea that you can either live in the lie, which is way easier, everyone's going to be way happier around you, or you can live in reality, which is harder and it sucks, but it's the truth. What do you do? Right? And that's clearly, people have been saying this for years, and of course the Wachowski sisters have now said, yeah, whether yeah. or not we intended it, that's clearly what was coming through.
Right.
But, like, people love The Matrix. I love, non-trans people love The Matrix. My brother, when he was in the fourth grade, was obsessed with The Matrix. So much so that he watched it every day for a year.
Wow.
My brother dedication. Is not trans. Yeah, he had a lot of dedication to a lot of movies.
Do that thing you do.
That was one of the movies he watched every day for a year. Love it. But like, clearly, on the surface, just it doesn't seem that way. Like, if you look a little deeper, it's like, yeah, that's a great parallel for the, but that's a story that everyone can relate to, which is why it was popular.
Yeah.
And this is kind of similar, where it's like, the artist clearly didn't intend for you to pick up these things. But does that mean that it's any less valid that you picked it up?
No. I don't think so.
And movies can be reclaimed.
Yes, absolutely. This movie has absolutely been reclaimed by the community.
I mean, I think a lot, too, about movies like Rosemary's Baby.
Right.
Roman Polanski's a real piece of shit.
Real piece of shit. Did not... This is a feminist icon film, and I don't think he intended to make it.
Roman Polanski doesn't really seem to me like much of a feminist icon. I'll go ahead and say
it. He doesn't scream feminist icon to me.
He screams like really old pedophile.
Yeah.
Who ran away and is living in France now.
He legally cannot come back.
To avoid extradition to the United States for crimes of which he was convicted of in a court of law. But that doesn't mean Rosemary's Baby is not one of the best movies ever about what it feels like to be a woman.
That's so true.
And he made that. Like it or not.
Like it or not, he did make it.
Like it or not, he made one of the best movies ever about what it means to be a woman and how scary it is to be a woman in society.
I will say, I think Ira Levin, the author of the book, probably did more to that.
True that.
Because from what I know, it's a pretty
spot on
faithful
adaptation. Ira Levin also made Veronica's Room.
Yeah.
Another wonderful play about how scary it is to
be
a woman.
I've heard people talk about this. I think it was You're Wrong About talking about how Ira Levin is a man who is strangely good at writing
women. But it's like, that doesn't necessarily, I don't know. It's like, so art can be taken from its artist a little bit and applied sometimes where they don't even see it.
Yeah.
And again, it's just like, if anything, all that proves is that there are so many universal feelings that all humans can understand that you're refusing to understand.
You are just, yeah, exactly. You're actively refusing to try to understand people.
Or it's like the buzzwords are getting into your ear.
Right.
To where you can't think about anything else. Think critically. If I could make one wish for the world, it would be that everyone had the ability to think critically. I think that would solve a lot of problems.
Yeah.
Then read signs and think critically.
Have a lot of religions out of business.
I know.
That's why.
I know.
Sorry, guys.
What are we supposed to do? What are you going to do?
Oh, I also wanted to bring up the scene in which I think it's Mozart gets pranked by putting his face in the butt. Remember?
That's a good prank, by the way.
Yes, but I don't think a 25-year-old male director should be directing a child to take his pants off for that
That's
bit.
True.
He was 25 when he made this.
Wow, that's only a year. Like
that's my. I'm 25.
I'm about to be 25. I was about to say, wow, that's a year older than me. I was like, wait, that's a month older.
That's only a month older than you.
Oh man, yeah, that's crazy. I can't. I'll be honest. I couldn't imagine making this at 25.
Okay, technically, it's not bad for an 80s movie.
You know, he probably went to film school.
It's not bad. Like, you know how much better I could do if I was given a whole summer, this whole ass summer camp to film in?
You know, the thing is there are many things to making a movie. Filming it is only one part of that thing. And there's so much more. There's writing it, which is something that this guy did not have.
No.
There's, you know, picking, there's casting it. Once again, something that maybe wasn't 100. Everything that is memorable about this movie is basically technical. The last scene is a technical thing.
Right. I also, one of my favorite aspects of this movie is like, there's just children staring in the camera sometimes.
Yeah.
Just like weird. There's children on roofs at some points and they're like, get down from there. It's unsafe. But there are actually children on the roof.
Yeah.
It's just very strange.
How much money did this cost?
Let's see.
I'm thinking Skinamarink cost $15,000. That's my baseline understanding of
a film, how much film costs.
How cheap a film could be.
Ooh, this was $3,500,000.
That's too much money. That's too much money.
And it made $11 million.
That's a decent profit. But
this is in the 80s whenever they were starved for slasher movies.
$3,500,000.
Right?
$350,000.
God damn it.
It's okay.
I'm sorry.
You know what? I was like, the numbers ain't mathin'. That's too many zeros. $350,000. That's what I thought you meant, though. I was translating it in my head to look like that. $350,000. That is too much money. I think I could make this movie for $50,000.
If given a summer camp?
If given a summer camp and given some extras.
Okay.
Because I imagine most budget goes to pay the actors. But these actors...
Most of them are children.
And these actors are nobodies. They're right. Nobodies. I feel that given 4 community theaters acting pools, $50,000 and a summer camp for 3 weeks, I could make this for $50,000.
Well, let's email someone and say we.
I would like to make Sleepaway Camp, but if it was good.
So I did want to go in briefly. The sequels. Okay, so the non-canon sequels, which is 2, 3, 4, and 2, 3, and Sleepaway Camp 4, Survivor.
The second Sleepaway Camp is not canon.
No. Because canon meaning it is not by Robert Hiltzik.
Okay, so he sold it off.
Yes. But then he comes back for Return to Sleepaway Camp. But in Sleepaway Camp 2 and 3 at least, Angela returns, being played by Bruce Springsteen's sister.
So it's a different woman?
Yes, and she, after a sex change operation, so she is...
Wait.
Yeah, so she is...
So Angela ends up being trans?
Yeah.
By choice?
In the sequels.
But that's not what the movie said.
Exactly.
At all.
Exactly. That's why Harmony said that they basically retconned it.
Yeah, because I was like, the movie so clearly indicates that she didn't want to be Angela. She wanted to be Peter. She was being forced to be Angela.
Right.
Not that she was like, well, I was forced to be Angela, but really, it grew on me.
That's the opposite of the message.
Yeah. It's like, oh, well, actually, I'm super well-adjusted after all that. Anyway. And I didn't have any problems. She comes back.
Yeah, not the actress, though. But
right.
Bruce Springsteen's sister.
Okay, so Angela's back.
And she's a camp counselor and kills people.
Okay, whoa. She's not in jail?
I haven't seen them.
Now I gotta watch it. They caught her red-handed with a severed head in her lap.
I'm trying to find,
So did Ricky not kill anyone?
Okay, that was my hot take. I think Ricky was involved.
I think he was.
Because he said, like, they're going to pay for this. And, okay, so the hands that they have that they're showing are Ricky's. That is the actor Ricky's hands because they were trying to do a misdirect.
Okay.
And those are his hands. And the scene right before Judy dies and they show, like, a flash of a quote-unquote silhouette. You can see it's Ricky.
It's a face.
It's Ricky's face, but with, like, a hairpiece to make it look like he has long hair. So that's just them trying to make us think that it's either Ricky or Angela, and then it's obviously turned out to be Angela, but I think Ricky was involved. But people say that Ricky doesn't know that Angela is Peter, but that doesn't make any sense to me because he said, I'll never tell at the house, and how could you live with someone
and not know that, like, penis?
Right. Right.
Like, Ricky knows.
Yeah. Also, he would have to.
Also, when she was a child and came home.
Right, she didn't look like a girl.
She was a boy.
She would have to grow her hair out.
Also, Ricky had met Peter and Angela pre-accident.
And Peter was significantly younger than Angela.
Yeah, and Ricky is older. So I think Ricky would have been like, weird that your entire face changed and morphed into your brother's face after the accident.
Right.
Yeah, that makes no effing sense because Peter would have been older than Angela, meaning that he would have been older than Ricky, and Angela and Peter are like, or Angela and Ricky are the same age.
Right.
So I think Ricky would have put two and two together and been like, oh, weird how Peter used to be older than me, but now we're the same age. That's odd.
Yeah, it's confusing.
And then also, what makes me go like, Ricky had to be involved, are the little kids.
Right.
There's too many murders that occur at one time.
For there to be only one killer.
And too far away.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're camping up in the woods. Like, they're in the woods.
Don't you know that Angela has that super gay strength?
that trans man energy, the ability to run way faster than all women, which is why they couldn't participate in sports. Because they have
that's from this movie. That's where
they have super speed, and so it's not fair.
Haven't you seen Sleepaway Camp? Don't you know they have super speed?
It's not fair to let them compete against the cisgendered people.
They're like the fucking Flash.
They're just gonna beat us so hard. It's not even a competition.
What? Fucking what?
Okay, so to me, because it's like, okay, Judy dies, because who dies the night of the social? Meg. And the children, right?
Right.
Because Judy and the children all die the same night. And Meg.
Yeah, they all die in the same night.
Because that's the same night, because after Meg...
It goes Meg's kids Judy.
Right. So how could Angela have killed Meg at the camp, gone to the social, seen Paul, been like, meet me at the water, then gone to wherever those kids are camping, which I guess she just happens to know, and, like... It seemed like it was quite far out, like, because they said that they drove.
Right.
So, gets to there, kills the four kids, and gets back to the camp in order to kill Judy, all before the camp counselor has called the camp to tell, what is it, Robbie?
Yeah.
That
Ronnie.
That the kids were killed. That's...
Ricky has to be involved.
Ricky has to have killed the kids.
Right.
Like, this is what had to have happened. Angela killed Meg. Or right. Ricky. It doesn't matter. One of them killed Meg. Then Angela goes to the social after she kills Meg. She sees Paul. She says, meet me at the water. Angela then goes and kills Judy in revenge for what happened to Paul because she knows that Paul's not there. Then Mel's searching for Meg. While that's all happening, Ricky goes, tells his counselor that he's going to lie down, and then goes way off wherever, which he would know because he's been to this camp for many years.
Right.
He knows where they camp. He goes, kills all the little kids for throwing sand at Angela or whatever.
He clocked that.
He was not happy. And then he comes back and goes to the social and gets a candy bar or whatever.
Yeah.
And then there we go. And then we know Mel blames him for murdering all the people, but he didn't murder all the people. But Angela clearly, the only one we know for sure Angela kills is Paul.
Yes.
I think that it's possible. I mean, all the other ones could be either. Stockpot could be either one.
I mean, it's interesting because they are all Ricky's hands, but that's just the director being a dumbass.
That's like, that's not to mean anything.
Right.
Yeah, I do think that she did probably kill Judy.
Right.
Mainly because I don't think Ricky... This is me getting a little psychological here.
Whoa!
But I don't think Ricky would have any reason to assault Judy with a curling iron.
In the eyes of the movie, Angela would have a reason.
Right, because for many reasons, she might like Judy, she might be curious about the vagina. I mean, the only reason you could really see Ricky wanting to assault Angela is because they used to date. And she's been kind of a bitch. But that doesn't really seem like it gets under Ricky's skin all that much. Mm-hmm.
Paul's a piece of shit, though. Like, making out with his best friend's ex-girlfriend and his cousin.
Yeah, what the fuck, Paul? It's a good thing Paul gets killed.
Yeah.
But that's, to me, like... But the movie just says it's Angela, and Ricky had nothing to do with it, huh?
Right.
That ain't true.
I don't think so either.
I don't understand logistically how it's true. But I also don't understand how anyone died in that boat accident.
Right. Yeah, that doesn't make any sense either.
The logistics don't seem like they were that thought out. To me, it's like, they could have just been camping in the woods at the camp, but they specifically talk about a car.
Right. It's very sad that Angela didn't get to go live with Lenny.
Yeah. What the fuck?
80s.
I know, but that doesn't seem like that was a choice.
Yeah. Very sad. What would you give this movie?
This is a bad movie.
Ah, but enjoyment-wise.
Parts of it are okay and kind of fun. A lot of it made me go like, ugh. And then the end makes you go, what? I guess I'll give it a 4.
Wow. I'm going to give it a 10 out of 10.
Oh my God.
No regrets!
Not a good movie.
I love it, though.
After I watched this the first time, I was like, glad I never have to watch that again. But, and then Jane was like, guess what we're doing?
Ooh. And, yeah, hopefully we can do Beau Is Afraid in the next couple of weeks.
Oh.
That's the goal.
I can't wait for that movie.
I'm so freaking excited.
So many movies coming out that I'm so excited
about. I know. Barbie
start, Oppenheimer middle, Barbie cool down.
Ooh, that's hot.
Cool down with Barbie.
I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Do you have a review for me?
I don't know which one to go for. You want a long one?
Yeah.
Okay. Boop, boop. 1 out of 10. It's a classic, but not in my eyes.
Oh, no.
Bomb out of zero. Bomb / 0 stars out of, and then it's got 4 little stars.
Okay.
A lot of people in the horror community refer to Sleepaway Camp as a horror classic, who should be viewed by people who love Friday the 13th. Well, I love Friday the 13th, but my God, do I hate Sleepaway Camp. I don't have a top 10 list of Transformers Dark of the Moon, but I do have at least 4 main problems I can elaborate on. My first problem is the main character of Angela Baker, played by Felissa Rose. Now, when the movie started, I thought her character was developed really well. You did?
What?
But the only problem is that this character barely speaks throughout the whole film.
Yeah.
I understand that her brother and her father were killed in a boating accident and she is shy. But if you're going to camp to meet people, you at least have to speak once or twice. That's not why she's going to camp.
It wasn't her choice to go to camp.
It doesn't seem like Angela wants to be at camp. She speaks a total of 20 to 30 words in the film. She does spout classic lines like, I don't know, and thank you very much. The second problem is the overall general story. This film is a complete Friday the 13th ripoff. I would not say that.
I also would not say that.
I mean,
I would say this is an entirely different beast.
It's a slasher set in a summer camp. And that's about as far as the similarities go. I don't think Friday the 13th had a cis man being forced to be a trans woman. I don't think that happened. I also don't think that that little child was murdering and scalding and hornets nesting people. That's not how people died. He got one weapon. But every time I say that, somebody who likes the film says they're completely different. Well, let's see. They both have kids who go to camp in the middle of the woods, and a killer who's not revealed till the end.
Oh, no! I don't think that's enough.
The same. They are the same movie.
They're the same.
Okay. All romance movies are the same. Number one, they have a boy. Number two, they have a girl. Finally, they fall in love. Same movie. There's only seven stories. What's that quote from, oh my God, New Girl, where it's like, there's only seven stories. Don't list them. I'm gonna list them. Man versus man. Man versus dog. Dog versus dog.
right, yeah.
Let me look it up. Nick Miller, seven stories.
Seven stories.
There's only seven types of stories. Okay, yeah, here it is. Gods is on Twitter. Okay, man versus man versus dog, dog versus zombie, James Bond, stories of kings and lords, women over 50 finding themselves after divorce, and car commercial.
Where's the lie?
And like, this person is just like, two movies had the same idea, and you're like, all stories have the same idea. It's like being like, that romance movie was exactly like that other romance movie.
Yes!
Because two people fell in love at the end, and you're like, yeah, that's the point of the romance story. This is a slasher film? Only Friday the 13th Only Friday the 13th was much more better.
Aww.
That's like Mac. Okay.
Make
it more better. Friday the 13th was more better, ultimately.
Aww.
Okay, the third problem I had is the sexualization of underage children.
Yeah.
What I mean by that, you don't need to
explain. You don't need to explain it, we know.
Is that the movie piles on sex appeal for kids who are 13 or 14 years old in this movie. If that's not creepy enough, you have the character of a pedophile chef, who I won't go into detail with, because if I do talk about him, it's gonna make me want to puke, and you don't want that. And you're like, you're writing.
They're like those people who are like typing and they're narrating as they're typing.
Out loud. There's only seven stories. Major spoilers below. Please do not continue if you have not seen the film.
They really care about you if you've seen not
Although,
seen the movie.
Although, I don't know why you would want to. It's also like, I'm telling you not to watch this, but don't read this review
unless you've seen it. Right.
The fourth and final problem is the ending. Angela goes into the wood to have some business with a boy.
Business with a boy? How old is this person?
No. Two older campers, counselors, by the way, not campers, come across her, and she turns around, and you see that she is not only the killer or a girl, but she is a boy! They show you everything.
Oh, no! Yeah, it's a little chubster.
Refer to problem three for more of that.
Oh, no.
Also, she is the killer. This is the classic twist ending that everyone remembers, but in all honesty, why? She is disturbed after her father and sister. Now you get it. Angela died in the boating accident. Peter, the brother of Angela, was turned into a girl by his aunt who went mentally insane after the accident.
I think she was always mentally insane. People are saying that she went mentally insane after the accident. I don't think that's true. I think she was always wacky.
Yeah, Ricky doesn't seem to be like he's any worse for wear after that. You know what I mean?
This is his constant.
This is his stable. But for me, this is not an effective ending because I can't have emotion for a character who doesn't speak or do anything in the movie. I like how the problem, their problem with Angela being the character is that it's really obvious and that they don't like her. Final verdict for Sleepaway Camp is a bomb, or 0 out of 4.
That's what a bomb means.
It also earns my seal of disapproval.
Whoa! Meaning
I urge you not to see this film.
Wow.
Unfortunately, I already have seen this film because I read this far in your review.
Because you told me not to read
any further. So I went and watched it.
Right.
So I could come back to the review.
It's really,
wish I had read the review first. The film is held back by the main character, a completely unoriginal story, sexualization of children. I also want to tell you that every single time they say sexualization, the S is capitalized.
It's that important.
Yeah. And that godforsaken ending. This film has no redeeming factors. But good news is, it has 4 sequels that I have to sit through, and the next 2 have Bruce Springsteen's sister Pamela Springsteen as Angela. Goody.
Why are they watching it then?
Rated R for horror, violence, and gore, sexual content, and language. It's 88 minutes and has 23 uses of the F word.
Wow.
This person probably has good reviews on other stuff. And I would like to see it. Kyle Haynes, 96. Oh, he was born in 96, which means he's 2 years older than me.
Wow.
And he wrote that in 2012. Just to be fair, he was only like 16. No. 2012. He would have been like a freshman.
Right.
No, because I was a freshman in 2012 because I graduated in 2016. He would have been a junior in high school when he wrote this.
Wow.
That's Kyle, cool. Not too bad then.
It's not bad.
See y'all reviews. Okay, do you have some reviews?
Oh, not really. Just some quips from Letterboxd. Maybe kind of evil, question mark? I will watch it a billion times.
That's you. These are all you.
Ricky has the BDE I'm really looking for in a man. Ew. He's a child. Defending Angela isn't enough. I need a gun. People love this movie on Letterboxd.
I'm looking through all his reviews.
Oh, I love when we do this.
He honestly gives most things 10s out of 10s. Like, he seems to really like horror. Dennis the Menace got a 10 out of 10.
Oh, okay. So he's a fan of Dennis the Menace.
Bride of Chucky, 10 out of 10.
That's the best one.
Here Comes Honey Boo Boo, 1 out of 10. Felix the Cat, 1 out of 10. Scream 2, 10 out of 10.
That's a good one.
Grand Theft Auto 6, The Ballad of Gay Tony.
Whoa.
10 out of 10.
Whoa.
Home Alone 2, Lost in New York. 10 out of 10. Scooby-Doo, 10 out of 10.
That's true.
Child's Play, 10 out of 10. Hannah Montana the Movie, no review. But he does say... Oh, he says this is one you should steer clear of.
No.
He's not a big fan of Hannah Montana or Justin Bieber, which he makes abundantly clear. That was when he was a sophomore in high school.
Oh, he was trying to be one of those kids.
Yeah.
I don't like them.
The Muppet movie, he recommended.
Yeah.
But no rating.
But no. Well, that's embarrassing to rate the Muppet movie.
The Army of Darkness, 10 out of 10. Casper, he gave a 10 out of 10.
Interesting.
Now, Home Alone 3, an 8 out of 10.
That's a high score.
That's a high score. Let's see. Does he have any other ones that I'd be like, whoa? He did rate Speed 2. He was very active from the years of 2011 to 2013.
Interesting.
And he has his own rating system.
Good for him.
He rated the entire show of Hannah Montana a 1 out of 10.
Whoa. Doesn't like Hannah Montana.
But he loves the Avengers movie.
Good for him.
This guy is real weird. Real weird. Oh, Groundhog Day was his 150th review on IMDb.
Wow.
Every single one of these has like 3 found this helpful.
That's crazy.
He's doing this for him, and I can appreciate that.
You know, I respect it.
He doesn't like the High School Musical movies.
He really needs to take a look at himself.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, look, buddy, just because it's got a, you know, it's got some singing and dancing doesn't mean it's not good.
Right.
Well, I feel like I made a friend today.
With him?
Yeah.
Okay.
He hasn't posted anything since the year 2013, but he'd only be 2 years older than me, so...
Hit me up.
Kyle, if you're out there, let's have a conversation about your thoughts on Sharpay's fabulous adventure. Because I disagree.
Respectfully? All right. I just wanted to ask you, how do you feel about Jamie Lee Curtis winning over Stephanie Hsu and Angela Bassett at the Oscars?
Now, over Angela Bassett, I don't really care.
Okay.
To be honest.
She was the favorite to win.
I thought Everything Everywhere All at Once was going to win everything, mm-hmm. just because on the whole as a movie.
It won most things.
It meant more.
Yeah.
But I do think Stephanie Hsu should have won,
mm-hmm.
but I do give her that she's very new.
She's very young.
She's very young. It's her first kind of like feature film.
And I think, I bet the Academy was like, Jamie Lee Curtis, when is she going to be up for another Oscar?
Exactly.
Like,
that's what I think happened, is they were like, this is Jamie Lee Curtis's time. She was finally in a movie that we respect.
Stop doing those trashy little horror movies.
And her mom, you know, was the lady from Psycho, so we gotta give it to her. This is like, who knows when she's gonna do a movie that we are allowed to like again. And it's so true. I think they were like, this is our time to give it to her.
I agree.
Stephanie Hsu, I think she'll win an Oscar. I don't think her career is going down anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I believe she's already been cast in some new Broadway show, because she was a Broadway performer.
Yeah.
Pre this, of course, she is the original Christine in Be More Chill.
Yeah.
Although she was dating the director. But that's all right. It's all right. She's still good. And then she also was the original, not the original, but she did play Karen in the original Broadway cast of SpongeBob the Musical.
Oh.
I actually saw her in SpongeBob the Musical. I didn't know who the fuck she was.
Right.
But she was a good Karen.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yes.
Awesome. It's great. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we appreciate it. And hopefully, Beau Is Afraid will be in your Spotify accounts in the next few weeks.
I'm buzzing.
Well, if we see it like the opening weekend, like I want to, and if we don't get to record that weekend, I will come up to Tulsa and record.
Yeah.
So, because we need to talk about it.
Yeah.
And I know that you guys expect us to. And we're always just trying to chase that success of Promising Young Woman.
Which will never hit.
No.
But it's okay. Maybe we will with Barbie. Although everyone's going to be talking about Barbie.
Well, we have to do it opening day.
Yeah.
Like we did for Promising Young Woman.
I will be there.
Yes.
For Barbie opening day.
Absolutely.
I would be there for Beau Is Afraid opening day if we were not in a wedding on
right.
the same day.
Right. But I'm going to make it happen. I want to see it opening
weekend. Certainly.
Yes. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Bye.